Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. Nice to have you with us today. There is growing evidence fruit may lower type 2 diabetes risk. Who says? Edith Cowan University in Australia, published in the peer-reviewed journal Clinical Endocrinology and Metabolism. Research has found eating at least 2 servings of fruit daily has been linked with a 36% lower odds of developing type 2 diabetes. Interesting, because last evening, after I had finished working on a commentary that we'll be sharing tomorrow about the corruption of science in the United States, not all science, but corporate science, yes, independent science, no, I tuned on and I was going over to see what the different networks were playing, how they were covering stories, and I came across this forensic file where they had Johnny Cash. It was interesting because I was doing a national championship race in Nashville, and we were supposed to meet with Johnny Cash after the race. And as it turns out, I had emergencies I had to attend to. I did the race, did well, and then immediately got on a plane. Everyone else enjoyed their meeting with Johnny Cash. I thought he was a terrific human being. Missed that meeting. So I'm watching last night, and there is the forensic pathologist talking about why he really died. And it showed footage of him from the age of 55, and I believe it was around 55 he had to go in for a double bypass surgery. And the surgeon commented later that an hour before the surgery, Cash went outside to smoke cigarettes, and he died from emphysema. But he also had many other heart conditions, and he was losing his vision because of diabetes. And he had severe diabetes, and yet he would not change. He never stopped any of his bad habits. And that was one of his great sadnesses, was that with about 55 days left in his life, he couldn't read what he enjoyed reading because of the high blood sugar. Yet he wouldn't change anything. Now, he is not an exception. He is the rule. An extraordinarily talented person who's left a legacy of wonderful music. And I was just thinking today, as I was tending to the animals in the morning, which I do every morning, and I had the music on in the background, because the McCalls in particular like to dance. They'll dance and bob to the music. And these are really some good classic sounds. And I was thinking, wow, how long has it been since that person made a hit? Probably 20, 30, 40 years. But they did make that hit. And that hit was so important, we're enjoying it today. And how many other times have we heard it? Hundreds. And we still will be over for another 100 more. So it's important to understand the healthier you are in mind and body and spirit, the more likely you are to appreciate the gifts of other people that you are in the position to enjoy. Could you imagine have been alive and been one of Socrates' students, or to have had a dialogue with Plato, or have debated with Immanuel Kant on the body-mind separation? But here we are today. We can only look back and appreciate how many great minds have preceded us. So just to start our program, I want you to know that I'm going back to a lot of the themes I did before. I spent an enormous amount of time on COVID, and I had to do that simply because you were being lied to. You were being used. Not about the virus. Yes, it's real, and yes, it's deadly, and yes, it's killed a lot of people, and you cannot be cavalier about it. But everything else, the lockdown, the mask, the social distancing, the death toll, the PCR test, the redoing the test at 28 cycles, repetition instead of 45, to get a false negative instead of a false positive, all that you've been played. And now the Wuhan. Did it exist there? You bet it did. But we're into an investigation that goes beyond that. And I'll be announcing the results very shortly. But the fact that it was created and got out by an accident is only part of the story. What were the Chinese military doing work on that? And by the way, new research shows that they're opening up 5 new stage 4 bio labs, and they will be doing gain-of-function research to biologically alter germs. Now, we've done the same thing. Russia, others have done it. But now at least people are paying attention to it, and that's a good thing. Also today, I'm starting a brand new series. And the series is, who do you believe and why? What is their history? Have they been accurate and honest in the past? And if not, why would you trust them today? And we're going to have some outstanding Orthodox scientists. In fact, the only people I'm interviewing are Orthodox scientists. So you're going to have a chance to hear some of these people. For example, after Health and Nutrition, you're going to hear a short, just a tease, from Dr. Lamam McHenry, one of the most outstanding scientists in the world. Listen to what he has to say. Now, that same Dr. McHenry will be on next Tuesday's Progressive Commentary Hour for the entire hour, where we sort out how corrupt science has become today, at least proprietary or commercial or corporate or capitalist science. So that's just one of the programs. Also today, we're going to take on the illusion of evidence-based medicine. Then we're going to look at a mother rebukes critical race theory as a nightmare. Now, we had one woman on yesterday, very strong in her determination. This is a completely different approach, very calm, very methodical. But listen to what she has to say. Every word is just, it's just nailing it. Also today, Robert F. Kennedy will be speaking with Naomi Wolf on our program, because Naomi Wolf over the weekend was canceled, deleted by Twitter, and her 1.2 million followers on Twitter. And Robert F. Kennedy has already been banned from all sites. Is it because he gives disinformation? That he's a danger? Yes. He's a danger to the lies, misinformation, corporatization, and weaponization of the entire Democratic program and the media that supports it and the oligarchs. Yeah, he's a danger. You don't want someone who has the truth as their only vice to have a chance to share it. That's our program today. Let's begin always with the latest on health and healing so that everyone in the audience can benefit. We are a nation beset by a real pandemic of diabetes. This is not in dispute. Nobody has to fake any numbers of blood tests or mortality. We have at least 25 minimum million with active type 2 diabetes. Children even have adult diabetes, more than any other country per population in the world. We also have pre-diabetes in about 60 million Americans. So more or less, we're almost at 100 million Americans. A little under one-third of our entire population has diabetes. And that means you're going to live a shorter life. You're going to end up with a higher incidence of cancer, heart disease, high blood pressure, and more often than not, obesity. So this is real. Now, with the Surgeon General and with 3.5 trillion dollars spent this year on disease in the United States, the most of any other industry, not a nickel was spent on being honest with the American public and telling them which foods they shouldn't eat, which foods they should, which exercise they should do, which supplements they should take, how to de-stress themselves. Not a word, as if it didn't exist, but it does. So it's time for us to stop believing that we're going to get someone rescuing us from an official position. You will not. To the contrary, they're contributing to the problems. So here's where we begin, with a really good study. And I would suggest doubling their 2 servings a day of fruit. I would suggest having 6 servings of fruit, 3 of those being berries. That would include pomegranate, raspberries, blackberries, strawberries, blueberries, any of those, cherries, tart cherries, any of those berries you want to have. 3 of the servings would be berries because they have very low glycemic factor, meaning very low sugar, but very high in polyphenols and nutrients that can trap free radicals and turn off inflammation in your eyes, therefore helping with any form of oxidative stress in the eyes, in your muscles, your heart, your brain. Then have another 3 servings minimum of things like citrus, like lemon with the whole lemon, grapefruit, the whole grapefruit, the bioflavonoids, the rutin, hesperidin, or the white pulp inside the skin, very nourishing. Now, yeah, you can add a little bit of manuka honey to it, 1/2 teaspoon, sweeten it up a bit, and then orange the same. And then you've got your other fruits like an apple. An apple a day does more than keep the doctor away. It's rich in quercetin, which helps your immune system, helps your body heal from infection. Taking the skin of 4 apples, putting them in a blender, tremendous amount of nutrition that you're going to get in polyphenols. So yes, it will help prevent diabetes, and it will help you if you have diabetes. That's what's important. Now, separately from Jinsu Canyon in China comes a study about ginkgo, G-I-N-K-G-O, biloba, B-I-L-O-B-A. The leaves have a multi-component and multi-targeted synergistic effect on treating neurodegenerative diseases. So we're talking about something that will help you if you have memory loss, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, ALS. Yes, one component, mind you. It's not a cure-all, but it's one piece of the puzzle we didn't know, and so now we do. So this is a major study on the mechanisms of neurodegeneration diseases. So it's just saying have the ginkgo biloba leaf extract. I would agree with that. And this has been in a peer-reviewed journal. From the Catalan Institute of Oncology and Biomedical Research Institute, which is in Spain, presented in Nutrition Online, diets that promote inflammation could increase breast cancer risk. And that just makes sense. An analysis of dietary patterns over 350,000 women suggests eating more anti-inflammatory foods. There's your fermented foods. There's all your greens, vegetables, microgreens, sprouts, especially sprouts and microgreens. Always have one salad a day with just microgreens, sprouts, things you can buy the seeds and grow them on your own kitchen counter. You don't need anything other than that. And anywhere from 5 to 8 days, you've got your sprouts and your microgreens. So now, they're extremely anti-inflammatory, and we need an anti-inflammatory diet in order to reduce breast cancer risk in almost a linear manner. And foods that increase inflammation, including red and processed meats, and look at the commercials on television. Pizzas, you're getting the processed meats. And those, we've got the beef, lots of processed meats, butter, margarine, trans fats, sweet sugar, high fructose sugars, and all your refined carbohydrates, pretzels and potato chips, muffins, toast, acrylamides, pro-inflammatory. So in effect, probably 90% of the American diet is pro-inflammatory. And because so many people are eating the same foods, and some are just, if you've watched that program, Man Against Food, has another host hosting it now. Does he look healthy? No. He, in my opinion, he looks terrible. And yet, there's all these people looking equally unhealthy around him, cheering him on like, you can do it, you can do it. And there he is. He's eating like 4 pounds of chocolate cake or something, always something extreme that the body cannot handle. Does anyone realize what is going on in his biochemistry, how his body is on full alert every time he does that? And yet that we consider normal. Watching the program about carnival eats, I'm always curious, what's going to be the next thing? And there's, when you think it can't get any worse, what they're making, they make something that you just, your jaw drops. All of it bad, and yet people think it's good. It's not. So we're eating ourselves to death. Forks and knives killing us. And so if we want to reduce breast cancer and reduce all cancers, then we have to go towards a healthy, local, clean, plant-based diet. Also, some good news about prostate cancer treatment from Shahid Benhasti, University of Medical Sciences. Quercetin, I've mentioned it 1,000 times. Quercetin, quercetin. You get it in apples, you get it in raw onions. Now it's good for prostate cancer. That's the latest information. Quote, quercetin is a flavonoid agent detected in fruits and vegetables with anti-inflammatory, antioxidant, anti-cancer effects. This flavonoid can suppress cell cycle transition and induce apoptosis in neoplastic cells, end quote, meaning it causes the cells, cancer cells, to commit suicide. That's good news. So take quercetin. Take half the amount of quercetin, generally speaking. If you're an average person, you would take, let's say, 2,000 milligrams of vitamin C, take 1,000 milligrams of quercetin, 4,000 milligrams of vitamin C, 2,000 milligrams of quercetin, spaced out throughout a day. Also from Wake Forest School of Medicine, an article published in the peer-reviewed journal Cancer Research, the breast microbiome, micro, M-I-C-R-O, biome, B-I-O-M-E, modified by a diet and fish oil. And that can help prevent breast cancer because you actually have a breast microbiome, the community of microorganisms that exist in breast tissue. And it's been shown now in this study that if you want to have a healthier breast and a healthier microbiome population in the breast, then have like the omega-3 fatty acids from fish oil and have yourself a diet that is rich in plant-based foods and low in the saturated fats. All right? This was a double-blind trial. So very, very good. Get your lactobacilli. Make sure you're taking some probiotics every day. Also from Oklahoma University, if you administer yourself a foot massage, you can reduce symptoms of anxiety. Well, a lot of people have had reflexology, where someone works on the foot, and each point on the foot also corresponds to a different point on the body. And that can help you manage stress. But if you can't get to someone to do a foot massage, then do it on yourself. Or you can even get one of those things you see advertised where you roll your feet across some rollers that stimulate the different trigger points, nerve endings in the foot. That'll help as well. Either way, it can help with anxiety and therefore help with hypertension and heart disease. How about that? That's the latest on health and healing. I'm Gary Nall. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, a short discussion by one of the individuals. In fact, I'm going to be interviewing him on next Tuesday's the Progressive Commentary Hour. And his name, which some of you may have heard him at one time on our show, others may not. But we're going to have him for a full hour, and that's what I'm really looking for. By the way, before I go, the World Health Organization chief scientist, number one scientist, was served with legal notice in India for allegedly suppressing data on the drug to treat COVID-19. Quote, the Indian Bar Association has taken legal action against the World Health Organization's chief scientist, Dr. Swaminathan, for her alleged role in spreading disinformation on the use of ivermectin to treat COVID-19. The association served a legal notice on her on May 25th, claiming that she was, quote, spreading disinformation and misguiding the people of India in order to fulfill her agenda, causing further damage. So, good information there. Now, let's see if we can do the same thing for the New York Times for spreading misinformation on and supporting and sponsoring 5G. More on that on an upcoming program, a whole hour devoted to 5G with five of the world's leading experts showing why we don't need it, why it's all a con job. You don't want smart meters, don't have them on your house or apartment. I'm working with someone right now who has got what I believe is environmental illness from the smart meters, they were 10,000 times higher reading than what they were supposed to read. And yet that's the utility company. So in a moment, when we come back, Dr. Lamon B. McHenry, a short statement about why all of us should stop trusting the evidence-based medicine, what we're told the talking head doctors and scientists on all the major networks, because they're lying. Back in a moment with proof of that.
Manufacturing all of these medical journal articles behind the scenes for basically marketing purposes. And I was astounded, you know, because I had this enormous trust in medical journals. You have to realize that a clinical trial on a blockbuster drug published in a top medical journal with the branding of a key opinion leader, that key opinion leader's university affiliation is worth an enormous amount of money in terms of confidence. What has happened in something like the past 20 or 30 years, especially with blockbuster drugs, is that we're sold a lot of pharmaceuticals where the risk-benefit ratio is not in favor of taking the drug, and we have all sorts of instances where people who really didn't need to be on these drugs took these drugs and then had serious adverse events. So disease mongering is a marketing scheme of pharmaceutical companies to persuade us to use fear and to use our trust in science in an extremely deceptive way in order to persuade us to go on different kinds of drugs. The oligarchy of corporations here has basically usurped cherished institutions of democracy, which involve checks and balances in the system, but also scientific integrity. So who's looking out for scientific integrity? Here's the problem.
More the whole hour with him next Tuesday night. Now, and tonight is going to be a whole hour on cancel culture with some really powerful minds, mature minds. People have not lost their mind because of foolish ideology. Here is someone you haven't heard of. He's a Cambridge-educated physician, practicing, overseeing a medical director for, I think, 20 or 30 years, Dr. Roger Hodgkinson. Here's what he has to say. Mind you, these are all pro-vaccine orthodox scientists and physicians who have had enough. They're coming out. And I mean, when they're coming out now, they're coming out by the thousands. And the mainstream media can't destroy all of them. Here's another voice.
This did not qualify for an emergency in any way, shape, or form, nor internationally. If you start from that pretext that it's not an emergency, everything else follows. There is no justification for a vaccine. It wasn't needed in the first place. It was rushed to market. It has no safety criteria established in the normal scheme of things for a vaccine, which is 2 to 4 years. And in particular, this is a new technology that should be given extra scrutiny before it's introduced. And in particular, for fertility, you cannot do a trial in 6 months and exclude fertility problems. And that is a theoretical risk. I hope I'm wrong. But it's a theoretical risk. Until it's ruled out, this is the grossest attempt, medical experiment, in an entire history. It could have the most grotesque consequences. It should be stopped immediately and other measures used to control the pandemic. This is not an emergency. We don't need a vaccine. It is unsafe, and it's potentially bloody dangerous.
Good for you for having the courage to speak up. Oh, by the way, I thought it was 5 new biolabs that are going to open. I was wrong. China, quote, to build 24 biolabs like Wuhan Institute in the next 5 years. So now we're going to have 24 of these biolabs, and they won't be working in cooperation with the United States. They'll be totally secret. And they've already tipped their hand in statements and articles published in their own peer-reviewed journals that it's for weaponization. So just be aware that they do not have good intents. Now, also, for those of you who have not been paying attention to the climate, from The Guardian, climate crisis to shrink the G7, that's the seven major countries in the world's economies, twice as much as COVID-19. Quote, they will lose $5 trillion a year if temperatures rise 2.6. And so, okay, so maybe 100 years from now, who cares? Temperature rise. No, it's rising as we speak. We just had another critical increase. In fact, quote, from Common Dreams today, atmospheric carbon dioxide hits highest level in over 4 million years. Quote, if we want to avoid catastrophe in climate change, the highest priority must be to reduce CO2 pollution to zero at the earliest possible date, end quote. This is brand new, just released yesterday. So, okay, all the scientists are on board. These scientists from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, NOAA, and Scripps Institute of Oceanography and the University of California, they all looked at the data. That's what they're saying. Here's the problem. The United States is on a rip trying to build more homes, build more cars, even electric cars. Do you realize how much electric cars exploit the environment and how much CO2 they cause to be released? Your new computer, your new cell phone, all those are environmental disasters. Eating meat, environmental disaster. All the private jets and the oligarchs flying on, adding to that, new buildings, because we're trying to keep pace with China, and China's on the biggest building binge in world history. It can put up a skyscraper from beginning to end, from leveling the ground to finishing it and pushing the elevator up to the 100th floor in 16 days. We can't even get a permit done in a year and a half to 2 years. So are they slowing down? They're speeding up. India, speeding up. The United States, speeding up. Brazil, speeding up. So if the four leading polluters in the world, Brazil's not actually the fourth, but if the first three are polluting nonstop, and it's all based upon economics, their own form of making money, whether it's called capitalism or any other, you know, political ideology, they're destroying any opportunity we have for the future. These are the leaders. These are the corporate leaders, supported by the media leaders, supported by the political leaders. So just want to let you know, it's on us, not them. They're not going to change. I just want you to know that. And also, I received an email today from my office, New York, and it was from Manny, physical ed and health at a high school in New York, and it says, can Gary Knoll do an episode on the dangers of COVID-19 vaccine on children? I'm an educator at a very large high school, and no one is speaking out about the dangers and lack of efficacy of this vaccine on children and adolescents. I do work with a large group of teachers and advocates who would like this information to immediately get out. I can help so this information can be distributed to the 1 million school children across New York City. Thank you, Manny. Yes, Manny, we're going to address that question. I'm sure many parents in this audience also are faced with that dilemma also, to vaccinate or not. And even though we do have lawsuits going on right now to prevent people from being fired or kept out of schools because of this, it doesn't mean that we will win that in the short term. So what I've done is I've taken a look at the data, and along with Richard Gale, we're going to present you why we all should have concern before choosing to vaccinate or not. Whether you vaccinate or not is your business. But look at the evidence, look at the documentation, and pull back and look at it in the largest context. Who's telling us it's safe and effective? Have they been right historically? Have they ever been caught lying, cheating, deceiving, withholding information, obfuscation? If they have, what has been the consequence? Has anyone gone to jail? Or have they just been given fines, pay the fine, and just go on as business as usual because they're identified. Nothing can really happen to them. To address this, Richard Gale is on the line now. Richard, nice to have you with us again today. Please answer the question for Manny and all the other school teachers out there and parents about the safety of the vaccine, and now we're told that it's mandatory, even though that goes against the principles of the Nuremberg doctrines and a person's constitutional right to freedom of choice. The form is yours.
Yes. Okay. So we are still waiting for the results of for the vaccine clinical trials that are being done for the COVID vaccines on children as well. Well, going to infants, I think two months of age is it's the youngest is the cutoff. So we're still waiting that, but we should also remember that within this context, and although all the emphasis has been on the COVID vaccines, that there are still the 32, 33 injections that every child receives before the age of six. And that's not including you can add on there the flu vaccine. If the child is taking the flu vaccine annually, so that's going to be before the age of six. You've now jumped it up to like 38 separate vaccination shots. So we are adding on additional shots to the existing CDC childhood vaccination schedule. And there is absolutely no research that we know whatsoever in terms of are there any adverse synergistic effects that could occur between the COVID vaccine and whether it's the adenovirus vector or whether it's the mRNA and with these other shots. We can be pretty certain, you know, that a child goes into a pediatric has a pediatric appointment, and the doctor sees, you need to get these particular shots. And by the way, we've got the new booster shot for the COVID vaccine, so we'll add that into the shots you're going to get today. I mean, this has been the standard protocol that pediatricians have been doing over the years. And so this is just going to be one added one into that schedule. We could look also that there were two studies that we know of. One was a very robust study because it was a true randomized controlled placebo study that was done at the University of Hong Kong and that looked at a group of individuals that received the flu vaccine and then those that received a real true placebo, just a saline or sugar solution. And there was a 400% increase amongst the vaccinated group for getting other respiratory infections from other viruses. And there's 150, 160 other respiratory viruses that are floating around out there. And among those were the coronavirus. If you're taking a flu vaccine, you're actually increasing your likelihood of getting other respiratory infections, including COVID in this case. And then there was also the U.S. Army Corps did a retrospective study, but they went back and looked at the Army personnel who had all received the flu vaccine and had noted that there was a high percentage of those, higher percentage among those rather than those who did not get the flu vaccine of getting respiratory infections. So it kind of validated the Hong Kong study. And if we go back and we look at just over the last 20 years or so, or plus, we look at the enormous increase in certain childhood illnesses, ADHD, autism, asthma, allergies, just to take four of the main ones. This has been an exponential increase year to year. And right now there's approximately 6.4 million kids between the ages of 4 and 17 who are clinically diagnosed with ADHD. Males are about three times higher to be diagnosed with ADHD, which is than girls. And that's somewhat similar to the autism diagnoses, where boys are four times higher. So there's this kind of a interesting parallel there. And typically, the first signs of ADHD will begin to appear around 3 years of age. That's, of course, the time when a child has received the maximum number of vaccinations. And then the average age of diagnosis is generally around 6 to 7 years. That's for a clinical diagnosis. And on top of that, we're seeing that children in poorer families, so their quality of their health is much less than those who are coming from affluent families, that there's a 2 times higher rate of ADHD. We're seeing this. We're seeing the identical pattern in autism. And I guess just for the sake of the argument, because now they've scrubbed the diagnosis of autism from the DSM-5 manual, but when parents have an autistic child, there's usually that, most frequently, there is that event very frequently occurring shortly after or immediately after a vaccination of encephalitis. So when we, for the sake of, we could just play it correct here, we could just call encephalitis instead of autism, really. Autism just being the symptom after an event of a child has encephalitis or brain inflammation. And we're already at 5.4 million children in the United States. So that's approximately a rate, they say anywhere between 40 to 54, 1 to 40 or to 54 children who have autism. And 61% of those, we should remember, have minimal or no functional speech whatsoever. This is an enormous hardship, and what little research has been done has shown that it's generally in more highly vaccinated segment of the population where we're going to see this higher increase of autism. We know for a fact that the CDC had covered up the MMR study that was dealing with the African American boys that Dr. William Thompson had whistleblew and presented that material to Brian Hooker about, and we've reported that on many different occasions in the past. You know, right now we are dealing with chronic conditions of asthma. It's actually the most chronic condition in children today, affecting upwards towards 7 million children under 18 and kids under 18. The CDC is claiming there's about 1 in 12 people have a clinical diagnosis of asthma, and it's highest again in non-Hispanic Black children, and again we're looking at in the Hispanic population as well, where again there is less excellent health care.
Richard, some years ago there was a study, you may have it in the file there, where it showed that the parents least likely to vaccinate with all the vaccines were those who had the highest education, especially higher educationist scientists. And they gave Lawrence Livermore research, which is out in California laboratories, where the parents there are highly educated. Lots have PhDs, both husband and wife. And they're the ones least likely to vaccinate. At the very time that they're saying it is the uneducated who choose not to vaccinate, they're very gullible and susceptible. That study underlined that they're not aware of who's not vaccinating and why. But now just use the figures you said. If you add in between 4 to 5 million people with autism and another 4 to 5 million with different ADHD or ADD, you're dealing with almost 10 million. Now add in, let's say, two parents for that. Now you're dealing with at least 20 million people who have been adversely affected, all of whom 100% were pro-vaccine. Now, when you have been a mother and you've seen a child completely normal, then they get all their vaccines and they de-evolve, then you're the expert, not the pediatrician. And almost always the pediatrician or nurse or pharmacist that gave the vaccines will deny any culpability or that it was the vaccine. And when it is, and then it's so long between the vaccine and the symptoms or full-blown episode that's diagnosable, you no longer can qualify to go into the vaccine adverse event reporting system and get your day in court. All your timeline is gone. So that further discourages people. Now they've got to take care of a child for the rest of their life who cannot take care of himself or herself. And so now if you wonder why 20 to 30 million Americans are questioning the safety of another vaccine, especially on their children, if they've already had experiences with children, trusting the establishment, now they're going to be far more cautious. Yet no credibility, no intellectual credibility, no natural credibility towards questioning the official versions and lies, because we've seen the Supreme Court in its own hearing stated that vaccines are, quote, inherently unsafe, end quote. That's the U.S. Supreme Court. So let's get over this lie that vaccines are safe and effective. If you say a vaccine's safe, okay, any of the ones historically taken, then let's go to the Toxicological Peer Review Journal and let's speak with some toxicologists and say, is there any ingredient in here that's not safe? They're going to say, well, of course, aluminum is neurotoxin, mercury is neurotoxin, polysorbate 80, a neurotoxin, formaldehyde, a toxin, et cetera, et cetera. So then why aren't we ever told the truth, the full truth in full context, that no one can predict where the vaccine will work? Some vaccines do work to certain degrees, and others don't, and others had serious side effects. But now let me put the final point on this. Here's the latest figures. Listen carefully, everyone, to these figures, because these are the figures that count. And here's the latest. Worldwide, this is from Brian Shohavy, editor of Health Impact News. Quote, worldwide genocide continues. 13,867 dead, 1,354,336 injuries in European data adverse event. Okay, let's just say that that they're far more accurate than inaccurate. All right, then it's not going to be 13,867 dead. It's going to be more, and it's not going to be 1.3 million. It's going to be more, but that's right now, just in Europe, and that's 27 countries that belong to the European Union. What is it in the United States? And here's where we can say these figures are grossly underreported. It's 5,165 deaths. So let's just round it off saying 5,000. And let's not say the Harvard Brigham and Young's University that 1% to 2% accuracy in reporting on the VERA system. Let's say it's 10%. So let's just then multiply that by 4. And what do we get? 9 times 5 is 45,000 dead. And we now say that we have 294,801. Let's round it off 300,000. So then you're dealing with over 2.5 million adverse events. Some are life challenging. In fact, there's 25,359 serious injuries. Okay. So now you're dealing with an epidemic itself. Not a pandemic, an epidemic of adverse effects and death. Now add those two together. Between the two countries, you've got 20 million minimally dead, more likely 60 million, and you've got at least 1.5 million injuries, more likely closer to, I would say, 3 to 4 million. Since when have we ever thought that it was completely acceptable, non-discussable, being censored if you bring even up a legitimate question, as an epidemiologist or a scientist or a physician, that, hey, since when is any medication, drug, or medical procedure acceptable if you're going to have tens of thousands dead and millions injured? And that's just the beginning. What's going to happen in a year or 2 years or 3 years? It could go off the charts, and that's why some people are very concerned. Final thoughts, Richard.
Yeah, I was just going to say that the with respect to the vaccine hesitancy, that it was just 2 years ago. Yeah, the Institute of Vaccine Safety, which is at Johns Hopkins University, they did a very large, widespread survey and study, and the director of that that institute of Vaccine Safety, they stated, quote, that those who are most hesitant and those that are among the unvaccinated, they quote, they tend to be better educated, they tend to be white, they tend to be higher income, tend to have larger families, and they tend to use complementary and alternative medicine like chiropractors and naturopaths, unquote. So, and you can think of, I think, Orange County, which is in Southern California, which is a very affluent affluent community, has one of the highest unvaccinated rates in the country. So there's that.
Okay.
Well,
that's it for now. I got a whole lot more to do. Thank you very much, Richard, for sharing that with us. In a moment, Jesse, we're going to share with the audience who the guest is for tonight's Progressive Commentary Hour. But right now, the latest, the federal government is spending $3 billion more on vaccine hesitancy ads as the death rate from the vaccines passed 5,000, and more likely 45,000, because it's only maximum 10%, as little as 2% is actually reported. So now, to convince you that you're a bad person if you don't vaccinate, you're irresponsible, you're a danger to community. Now, hold on a second. Before they vaccinated, they said that it would just be a one shot in the arm. Then it was two. Now it's boosters. They have never tested the booster with this. Now we find out that it doesn't stay in the shoulder. It migrates all over the body, hence all the blood clotting and the heart attacks and the seizures, etc. And now we're finding people can shed it. Irony of ironies. The vaccinated now become those who are infecting and could hurt the non-vaccinated. Be careful being around vaccinated people. All right? The science does not support them being safe. To the contrary, the science shows they can be a vector for spreading it. But if you've been sick with COVID, with or without symptoms, you now have natural immunity. And they'll never talk about natural immunity. But they will spend $3 billion of your money convincing you that you better get this done. Now, tonight, we're going to talk about what's wrong with being woke. We're going to take a look at everything concerning the idea that one small clique of people has all the truths on their side and nothing else that we have done in our lives, who we are as individuals, the quality of our character, the nature of our kindness and goodness, acceptance, working together cooperatively. None of that matters. But it does. And we're pushing back. Now let's hear from a mother at a Colorado school meeting to a community, to the board that decides, you know, the curriculum and or sponsors the curriculum. And here's someone who's done her homework. Here's what she had to say.
A Douglas County School District child, and I'm also the president of Parents United America, which represents hundreds of parents who are outraged and very concerned by these shifts that are happening in our public school system. We've heard a lot about how the education, the equity educational policy is not equivalent to critical race theory. However, I've heard many things that are very disturbing that show it to be quite the opposite. First of all, the term equity, it sounds great, but is exactly opposite of equal opportunity. Equity demands an equal outcome. That only happens when you gerrymander things to favor one group or another. It's not the same as equal opportunity. The second thing that concerns me is when I heard the definition of equity that has been shared here and through many communications from the district. It talks about groups of individuals. When you talk about groups, it is collectivism. Is separating children into groups. That is exactly what it is doing. And groups based on what? What we've heard from both hiring the Gemini group, which is also another thing that concerns me, is the groups are broken down into race, gender identity, sexual preference, and oppression. When we look at the Gemini group teaching, which I took time to watch the entire thing, it is even more disturbing. And this group was hired by this board. Because in that training, it talks about oppressors and oppressed. That is damaging to every group of children. First of all, some groups of children are thought of as being shamed for who they are. The others are taught that they are victims without the ability to further themselves and to look at the others as the enemies. We all know the Dr. King quote that has been shared, color of our skin versus the content of our character. He had a dream. This is a nightmare. It is a nightmare for our children, and it needs to end now. The training also, by the way, divides basically educators and parents, because in the training, it refers to parents as dissenters. We are not dissenters. We are the parents. It goes on to say and train educators to tell dissenters that this is simply the way we are going to educate your children. They are our children. We are the ones that have the moral authority over their education. We will not be marginalized. The board's job is to represent the stakeholders. When I looked at that screen up there, the stakeholders that were consulted before this policy was implemented does not list parents. Neither does the advisory committee. We are the stakeholders, and we need to be included in this. Let me end by this. The job of the board is education. Right now, according to state proficiency tests, only 59% of Douglas County students are proficient in reading. Only 48% are proficient in math. That is the job of the school. The teaching of morality, teaching students to be kind, we can teach them to be kind. The rest of it belongs to the parents, not to social engineering in the schools. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Flora.
Okay. If you think she's speaking just for herself, then you have been not paying attention to 200 million plus Americans and their concerns for a society run amok. But it's happening, and the big pushback is coming. Also, for those of you who want to protest, there's going to be a protest at the United Federation of Teachers headquarters, Manhattan, this Saturday at noon. It's join New York Teachers for Choice. These are teachers and parents working together, and they're going to protest at 52 Broadway in Manhattan, and that's at the union's headquarters. What are they protesting for? They want to say no to forced vaccinations, no to forced in-school COVID testing, no to the forced masking of four-year-olds, no to student health passports, no to the dehumanization of our children and educators. So it's 52 Broadway, and so that's what it is. Now, we're going to end our show today, and to our WBAI audience, you'll be leaving us in 2 minutes, but this is Robert F. Kennedy Jr. in a conversation with Naomi Wolf. Now, mind you, Naomi Wolf is one of the major feminist authors and intellects, and she was just herself canceled and shamed on Twitter and all the other social media. She joins Robert F. Kennedy. We're going to go to the top of the hour at PRN.FM, so please pay attention. But we will say goodbye to BAI in just 2 minutes. Everyone else, stay on board. We'll get as much of this discussion in as possible.
Thank you very much, Naomi.
So you've told me I can call you Bobby, so I'm going to call you Bobby, if I may.
Please.
Thank you. And the reason I reached out to you this morning especially is that I was shocked to be told by one of your colleagues that a state senator in my home state of New York has actually made a public announcement in a press release that I read as if he's proud of it, alerting the world to the fact that he'd reached out to Jack Dorsey, the CEO of Twitter, to get you deplatformed for medical misinformation. Would you tell us about that, please?
Well, I don't know much more about it than you do. I read the senator's name is Brad Holyman, and he's a senator from Lower Manhattan. And he's been very active for many years on the vaccine issue and on getting, you know, on getting rid of vaccine exemptions for the MMR vaccine and the other vaccines in New York State. He sent a letter to Twitter accusing me and also my organization, the Children's Health Defense, of passing misinformation on a Twitter. He did not specify exactly what the misinformation was. And as you know, we put at Children's Health Defense, we do not post misinformation. In fact, we fact check the movement. So if we see misinformation from people who are trying to get the support safe vaccines, we alert them. We have on our board, we have on our advisory board, we have a Nobel Prize laureate, Luc Montagnier, who discovered the HIV virus and won the Nobel Prize in 1983. We have two former chiefs of the National Toxicity Program. We have dozens of PhDs and scientists and doctors, and they would not tolerate if we were passing on misinformation. So we fact check everything that we do, all of our public statements rigorously. We cite and source all of them to peer-reviewed publications or to government databases. And, you know, I would challenge Senator Holyman, sorry about that, to come up to a point, and we've sent him a letter challenging him to tell us where we got the facts wrong. As you know, the term vaccine misinformation has nothing to do with the accuracy. It has to do with it's a euphemism for any statement that departs from government orthodoxies or government proclamations, whether it's accurate or not. And so when they say vaccine misinformation, it just means that we are questioning things that they don't want people to question. A.J. Rollins has this famous quote about that people don't tear out a man's tongue because they're frightened that he's going to tell a lie. They tear out his tongue because they're frightened that he's going to tell the truth. And, you know, I think that's what it's pretty clear that that's what we're dealing with here. I think as you and I, you know, understand, there's just an irony here that's almost comical and really shocking that a Democratic elected official would be calling on one of these, you know, these internet titans were really a threat to democracy. And I think Dorsey is the best of all of them because he's at least making noises about, you know, I don't want to be a censor. And he's the least enthusiastic, but they're all, you know, their business model, their corporations, so they're serving their shareholders. And they're relying on government contracts, and they're relying on these contracts with large corporations. And so there's always this huge danger that these companies that now control the public square, they control all speech in America, will be hijacked for corporate purposes. And for a Democrat to be actually calling on them to censor information that criticizes a pharmaceutical product, and a pharmaceutical product that is zero liability. These are the companies that brought us the opioid epidemic, that gave us Vioxx, that, you know, that it just killed people wantonly for profit, and show that again and again and again, that they're corrupt and that they're venal and that they're craven and mendacious and murderous. Yeah. And for him to be calling on, you know, an internet titan who now controls free speech in our country to censor information about a product made by one of those companies or all of those companies is really, it's crazy that the Democrats have gone this far. And, you know, by the way, this is exactly what the First Amendment was put in the Constitution to prevent, which is government officials telling private publishers to censor criticisms of government policies. That's why we wrote the First Amendment. And in the Constitution, there is no, there's no exception. There's no pandemic exception. There's right. No place, you know, there. And by the way, Washington was very aware, and the founders were very, very much aware of pandemics and their danger, because there was a smallpox pandemic at the bit debilitated, particularly the troops in Maine that were, you know, when we were fighting for Ticonderoga and Saratoga and Montreal, that the Northern Army, which is the Army of New England, essentially, were debilitated by a smallpox epidemic. So they knew about it.
Okay. The entire interview is up on, which is a half hour, is up on GaryNoll.com and PRN.fm. We're out of time. It's just now we're taking on their science, and we're showing you their science does no water. We're also taking on the institutions that promote them and protect them. They should have read The Art of War, Lao Tzu, in the 5th century B.C. by defending Fauci, which they're doing now, and saying there's nothing to see here, keep moving on, but there is something to see there, that it's highly likely that Fauci was one of the people responsible for this entire mess, the whole pandemic, that they also implicate themselves at the same time. Thank you all for listening, and have a nice day.